welcome to the D3 podcast. I am your host, Dan Kaplan. I am joined, as always, by Caleb Abney. Caleb, say hello to the people.
Dan, thanks for having me on. Hello, everybody. Happy to be back on. It was a crazy couple of weeks we had here with D3 Lex, so I'm looking forward to breaking it down with you.
Yeah, and we have an awesome episode. We planned ahead this week because we are smart and we are adapting. We're getting better. And so it is currently April 5th. That's Tuesday. You are listening to this on April 7th. That's Thursday. We're going to talk through the last week's worth of results. We're going to talk through the top 20. And then we're going to preview some of these Wednesday games. Then tomorrow after the games, we're going to come back, quick hitter, get, you know, maybe a 15-minute segment talking about those results, tack it on to the end of today's episode, and then we'll have that ready for you guys on Thursday when you're listening to this. All right?
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of time traveling. It's going to be exciting.
It's going to be a little bit confusing, so bear with us. But we figured it's the best way to be able to promptly get you some responses to the Wednesday results and get you some detail on the previous weekend. And so this was our best plan that we could come up with. So what do you say we get to it? Caleb, where do you want to start? Weekend in review or Wednesday preview?
Let's see. I'd love to go back and look through this past weekend here. We had some amazing games that I really want to touch on.
I think that is a pretty good plan as well. So let's go ahead. Let's get to it. We'll go through. I'm going to rattle off some scores, and then we'll come back. We'll hit them from the top. Bunch of upsets. So we have RPI 13, RIT 12. Huge upset there. WNL 11, Lynchburg 8, another big upset. Middlebury 21, Tufts 14. Of course, a big upset there. You never really know what's going on in the NESCAC, apparently.
It's a wild year, Dan.
Your sign is 5. Another one that's definitely an upset, but one that if you've been paying close attention to Muhlenberg's results for the last year or so, you're not totally, you know, thrown off. Bowdoin 15, Amherst 12. So we finally had a favorite actually win a game and hold serve. And I guess that's it for us for right now for this slate. And so we'll go back to the top. RPI 13, RIT 12. I've been talking a lot. So Caleb, tell me what you think of this one.
Yeah, let me get in here, Dan. All right. So this was a really great game. I actually just got done watching the film here with it. I thought RIT came out pretty slow and they left the door open for RPI. Quick note here. Apologies if I get these two abbreviations mixed up because they are so close and I'm not the best at talking. But going ahead here. So RIT, they started off real slow, let RPI stay in the game. It was close at the end of the first quarter. I think it was actually tied at the end of the first quarter. But then RPI goes ahead and just grinds it out defensively and has a huge second quarter. So I got to give a lot of props to the RPI defense. But at the same time, I can't fail to mention the RIT shot selection. I have the big bolded letters here, popcorn, for all of their shot selections here. So from what I was seeing, it was a lot of stick side high, a lot of 12-yard shots that were very, very savable. Not to take anything away from the goalie play, because I thought Joseph Perry had a phenomenal game, and we'll get to his fourth quarter saves especially. But the RIT shots were very savable, didn't give them too much of a challenge. So RPI continually grinds out the game there. They fought hard. Ended up getting a two-goal lead late in the game. RIT gets one to make it a 13-12 game, gets the ball back, but isn't able to do anything with it, and RPI holds off to win 13-12. Joseph Perry, just talked about him before, but he was absolutely incredible in the fourth quarter, standing on his head, making some huge saves that really determined the game. He finished with 23. In total, so I thought that was a really good summary of how RPI won the game. Moving forward a little bit, I wasn't too impressed with Hutchinson's from RIT. But a lot of the looks that he saw weren't very savable. I thought a lot of the looks were in transition or tough shots from 7 and 7. So I don't want to harp on him too much there. A person I do want to highlight, though, is Trey Frolic. That man has a rocket, Dan. Absolute rocket. I love watching him play. Love watching him shoot. Gives me some Brock vibes a little bit. So definitely like seeing that. But at the end of the day, I thought RIT just really didn't come out for this contest prepared. They were slow, and they kind of were waiting for RPI to lose the game. And I never feel like they went out and really took the game and tried to win it. So congrats to RPI. They had a great game plan, came in and executed perfectly. And it does make me a little concerned for RIT coming up for the rest of the season.
Yeah, so a couple of things that stand out to me about this one. Starting attack unit and the next sub. So RIT makes some personnel moves and decisions throughout the game because RPI is double pulling and short sticking that attack unit. And so when they do that, RIT mixes up some guys and adds Dylan Bruno into the mix. But so those four guys, the starting attack unit and Dylan Bruno, only combined for 1 point, which, like, I can't ever recall an instance of RIT's attack unit getting held that quiet through a game. Like, that is kind of astounding to me. They did get plenty of production from their starting midfield unit. Like, those guys, all three of them combined for 4 points each, or not combined for 4 points, but each one of them had 4 points, so they combined for 12. But I mean, it just makes the RPI game plan really clear. They came in, they wanted to pull those guys up, make them earn a bunch of good, hard goals, unassisted or, you know, just tough takes against pulls and short stick attackmen, and then not slide as much as you would want to, or as much as they would typically hope that defenses do for them, so that that ball can do the work, you know, and they can catch you in the adjacent rotation. The ball gets going from there and it's impossible for the defense to catch back up. But that didn't happen as much in this game. And a lot of it has to do with RPI getting them out of their rhythm with that double pull and short stick look. And then RPI, Cooper Urban, 6 points on the game, really even 3 and 3. He was awesome. Anyways, before we move on from this one, like, it's one of those ones where when you go back and you kind of look at the stats through, like, a coach's point of mind or through, like, a team scheme type of a thing, like, really interesting. All of it points towards RIT win, except for the shooting numbers and the RPI edge in saves. Like, ground ball count. Everybody says ground balls win games, right? Like, I've heard that a million times. I've said it plenty of times myself. RIT wins the ground ball count 47 to 18. Like, that's a huge difference. You know, that's basically 30 ground ball difference. They win the face-off count by 11. They go 100% in terms of man up, man down, meaning every time they foul, they defend it so they don't give up any EMO goals to RPI. And then they go 2 for 2 in their man up. So they score in both of theirs. They outshoot them 53 to 29, which, like, if you get 53 shots in your RIT, you're thinking you're in pretty good shape. So, like, it's just a really weird situation. I think if you could go to Coach Kuhn and show him this stat sheet, before you show him the final score in some sort of, like, alternate parallel universe where he has, like, a crystal ball and could have looked forward and seen the stat sheet before the game, he probably would have been like, all right, well, you know, we got this one. But, you know, credit to RPI for pulling it out and making a few more plays down the stretch. Like you said it, they pull up to a 2-goal lead, and they hit in transition for a goal that's, you know, off of a beautiful save, a great outlet. Quick one more across the field, do a skip, and, you know, it's in the back of the net, and it all happened like this. And it's like, dang, you know, like, 2-goal lead with 4 minutes. I think they have a chance to really pull this thing off now. You know, like, that was one of those plays that, you know, down the stretch, those guys made the plays that you needed to make to actually, you know, come up and land that type of an upset.
I didn't know if you caught this, Dan, but after that goal, the RPI bench, we had about 25 to 30 guys doing the row back and forth. It was incredible to see. I absolutely loved the hype from the bench there. It was awesome.
You started to go there. RPI, I'll say antics. Did you catch the end of the game situation.
Oh yeah,
inbound. Where player, I like, I don't know if he was told to face guard him. Like, I don't know what the situation is, but he tackles him. He just tackles
him. He tackled him. Straight tackled.
What do you think?
Well, I don't know. I don't know the letter of the rule book there. So I may be speaking kind of out of turn.
You're not allowed to tackle people.
agreed. But if there's no time on the clock, what do you do? I mean, give him the ball with 1 second. Like,
I think it's like normal. Like, I think that's what happens, is there's a flag down, but the time in the game expires. Like, the time in the game still expired, so the game is over. It's one of those situations where, like, if there was more time in that game, they would have been yelling at them to throw the ball out of bounds so they could have got the extra man, but there wasn't. So, like, game over.
What can you do there? Yep, exactly. It's just a tough situation. At the end of the day, it was a good game plan. I mean, there's no time on the clock left, and he's not getting a shot off if you tackle him. So
my question, I don't know, is if you could let Coach Berkman go back in time and tell him to have his defenders, hey, when they blow the whistle on the inbounds, just tackle Ryan Barnable. I'm pretty sure he would have done it. I think he would.
100%, no doubt.
Interesting end of the game there, but let's go ahead and transition. Let's bounce down south. We have another upset with Washington and Lee and Lynchburg. WNL 11, Lynchburg 10. Caleb, what'd you think of this one?
Well, Dan, I mean, we've been talking about WNL a lot. They've been kind of been on the upward trend, and Lynchburg kind of a little bit on the downward trend. Definitely could see this upset coming. Defensively, WNL struggles a little bit, but I thought Nick Spagoletti played a great game in the goal. He has an overall 62% save percentage and sees some of the most shots in the game. So I think he's playing excellent right now, and he really kept them in this game and was a force. And 7-3 in their past 10 games is pretty impressive.
Yeah, no, I think what you're looking at is 7-3 in their past 10 games against Lynchburg, right?
Correct. Yep.
Gotcha. Yeah, so that is really weird. And I feel like they just kind of have their number as of late. Really weird. The Witherall era has not been great to Lynchburg, specifically the AJ Witherall era. But anyways, let's focus on this one. I just feel like Lynchburg is really in a spot where the injury bug is hurting them. Their offense is so dependent on midfield dodging. So to have two of your first line midfielders out and relying on guys that you haven't typically relied on as much, like, it just hurts them a bit. You know, they just aren't quite as dynamic. And so now a guy like Ryan Kenny, who's averaging somewhere around 4 goals a game, now only gets 4 shots in the game because the WNL defense doesn't have to leave them anywhere near as much. I wish that we saw a little bit more initiating from Kyle Lewis, like from X, just whether it's him off of a single dodge or him like getting a pick and them working around it off ball. We don't see it a whole ton from their offense. Like I said, it's really, you know, midfield initiated, really midfield driven. Perhaps that's what they go to more if Rogers and Wolf are going to miss more extended time, is they go and they let Lewis attack more from X and send him a pick, or, you know, let him do some more dynamic stuff, just giving him more freedom and space. I feel like a lot of times he makes his money right now in transition, or just like ball goes out of bounds and he picks it up and goes. But perhaps they need to just kind of rely on him to create more offense right from the get-go. And then I'll transition here to WNL. WNL offense, I feel like, is really in an interesting spot. And we talked about WNL last week. We said if they were going to win this game, it was because the two-headed group of them at the face-off X combines to do well against Michael Krause, and they split 50-50 there. And then we said that Spagnoletti was going to have to make a bunch of saves, which he didn't have to get super high. He got to 10 saves. But, you know, those two things hit for them. And then additionally, offensively, like, they score some opportunistic goals, some crease jams that turn into good looks, some two-man play at X where, like, there's a issue and the communication, and so they get him like right at GLE or something like that. There's some other like weird goals, but the bottom line is they found the back of the net, you know, like they capitalized on those opportunities. They scored one that's like a behind the back with real low angle that sneaks by like more right over his shoulder, you know, and like, is it the prettiest goal? Probably not. Like, I mean, it's behind the back goal, but is it exactly the greatest goal of all time? Like, probably not. But they score there and they capitalize on those opportunities, you know? And so they deserve some credit for that. They're playing so many guys on that side of the ball. Like, I can't imagine like being in that system and like trying to come up with like a rhythm and like get into some sort of like chemistry with them. But, you know, to their credit, they're getting the most out of their guys by doing it. And they've been playing guys like Taylor Witherall. We mentioned him earlier, like, he comes through the box and gives them something as an attackman for his entire career that's used to being guarded by poles, you know, like that's something that gives them a little bit more of a threat and makes them a little more dangerous if there's a bad switch, you know? And so they're doing some different things that keeps the defense on their toes, and they're constantly changing and regrouping and reorganizing. And so, you know, maybe that's the trick and maybe that's the ticket, is that they've been able to keep defenses on their toes, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm not exactly sure, but, you know, credit to them for capitalizing on their opportunities and for continuing to change and keep defenses, you know, moving and having to communicate and talk through different looks and different personnel.
Yeah, being unscoutable is definitely a big threat.
But, yeah, WNL, I mean, I'm not sure a month ago we would have been expecting them to be in the driver's seat for the ODAC, right? You know? Would you have?
Mm-hmm. Not at all. Not at all.
Credit to him. All right, let's keep it moving. Let's go and let's go back up north, of course. We'll go to NESCAC, and we will hit the Middlebury Tufts upset. Middlebury,
oh, yeah.
1, Tufts 14. That's now two losses in a row for Tufts. Weird game. Middlebury comes out, goes up 5-1. Tufts comes all the way back, makes it, and it gets tied at 7. To then, which Middlebury goes on a 7-0 run. And next thing you know, it's 14-7. It's like, man, like, Tufts is really in a hole again. Like, if they're going to come back, it'll be a spectacular performance, which I guess could have happened. But yeah, weird game in that sense that it's, you know, some big runs up there. What do you think of this one?
Yeah, it's a game of runs when you talk about these two teams in this game specifically. I mean, the pace of play that Middlebury played was really great. It kept Tufts on their toes. I'm really questioning Tufts' second quarter ability to actually play lacrosse. The past couple games, they have just been nowhere to be found in the second quarter specifically. So I think if they can pick that up, they're going to be in a little bit better of a spot. But like you said, Middlebury jumped off to that early lead, and we had a lot of those runs. And Tufts' defense, they just looked slow. They looked not awake. They weren't ready for this game. But I was really impressed with Middlebury coming from X. I thought they got a lot of good looks dodging from X, and Garzone was very leaky on his pipes. There's a couple too early on that snuck by him. One was near side pipe, which is a big no-no for goalies. But I just thought that he could have prepared for those a little bit better. He did fine when they had the 7-on-7 shots or 7-and-7 shots or dodging from up top. But the X looks just really killed them and killed their whole defense, really. And I think that's what led Middlebury to get that 7-goal win. Tufts, I also wasn't impressed with them when they were settled 6-on-6. Thought Bradle had a lot of turnovers. And all the looks that they did get were really off of unsettled situations. So I'd like to see Tufts be able to slow it down and score those goals 6-on-6 when they need to in a game like this with a lot of runs. But at the end of the day, I thought Middlebury played a great game, like we said. They came out and just absolutely dominated them with the runs. Their bench, again, absolutely hype. I loved the getting in Bradle's ear a little bit. It definitely had to affect him some with how he was playing and how much they were yelling at him. And at the end of the day, I do want to see more from Bradle in a game like this. I mean, this is a very winnable game that if your stars come out to play, they're going to play good and win this game for you. And one goal, three assists, isn't going to get the job done in a game like this. So I want to see Tufts improve their shooting accuracy. I want to see Bradle step up and start playing the way that he should. And I want to see them come alive in the second quarter. I think they need to put a full 60 minutes together. And until they show that they can do that, I don't have them as a top five team right now.
Yes. So the box only has Bradle for two turnovers. I thought Middlebury did a really good job limiting his touches. So they shut a man up, as in, like, short stick, just shut him. Don't let him get the ball. Don't let him touch it. And then 6-on-6, they really extend on him. I thought Middlebury had a really good plan. I thought I could be wrong, but I think they used their second guy. I think they really like their cover that guarded Boyden. I think they think of him as their top guy. And then I think they used their second to, like, really extend and limit his touches. And then play him with, like, I don't know that we can 100% diagnose this kid as a goon, but I'm going to right now. Goon status.
Stamp it, Dan.
Goon status. Officially applied. Officially applied. Let me find his name real quick for you. Billy Dubinsky.
While you're doing that, I just want to let you know it was 5 turnovers against Union for Bradle. So sorry for that correction there, but do want to see him clean those up.
Yep. Yeah, definitely. Billy Dubinsky, goon status, officially, officially stamped for him. So he plays with, like, a real edge, plays with a ton of physicality. And so I think that they trusted him to go out and just kind of, like, disrupt him and make him, you know, put his head down and really fight to get to dangerous spots, or fight to get to, you know, spots where I guess he can just, you know, he's so slick, he can turn and just shoot it over someone's shoulder. And that's how he gets the goal that he scores, is he, like, fights to a dangerous spot, but he makes him work for it. You know, none of those easy goals where the ball just is in and out of his stick. And, you know, there was a transition look that he just happened to be the last to touch it. Or, you know, he's able to get an assist out of a situation where, you know, the defense gets slid into one of those midfielders or something like that. And he can just throw a, quick feet inside or something like that. Like, Middlebury didn't let any of those things happen. So his numbers, you know, are a little bit lower than what we typically would be expecting. And part of the reason that they didn't is because they really game planned to try and limit his ability to touch the ball. And so when they would go and extend on that at X, like, now he's catching the ball deep at X with his, like, heels on the end line rather than his toes on the back of the crease, you know? And so Middlebury, I think, deserves a good amount of credit there for making that tough on him. And then I think they found their lefty. They're battling some injuries as well. We talked about that with Lynchburg. I think they found their lefty in Tommy Swank, who is a natural righty and has been playing midfield for them, but is plenty capable with his left hand. So he came in and owned that spot and then had 6 goals on the game. So one more thing to keep an eye out for them is, you know, him going down and playing attack, but how that may impact the midfield. And then we need to move on from this one. And maybe I'm just old man yelling at the clouds, but, like, game's on the line, fourth quarter, backs against the wall. It's probably already an insurmountable lead, but, you know, they believe that basically any situation that they're in, they can come back from and they can score a bunch of goals quickly. They win a faceoff, and the faceoff guy throws a bounce pass to the goalie that gets, like, bobbled, that turns into a riding goal the other way. Like, that's the type of stuff that just, like, I can't shake with this Tufts team. You know, it's like, you live and die by all that awesome stuff, but, like, when you die by it, it's got to hurt a little bit more, though, you know?
And it's not great to see. Nope.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, let's move on from this one. Heading to Muhlenberg and Yersinus. Muhlenberg 8, Yersinus 5. Obviously, the first thing that sticks out off this is Yersinus only getting to 5 goals, right? Like, that's a little bit of and probably not something I would have expected. Your first thoughts when you saw this score? Go.
Great. Great effort by Muhlenberg defensively. Like you just touched on there, 5 goals, holding any team to 5 goals, doesn't matter who you're playing, is a big, big win in my book. But I'm not really shocked by this, Dan. I mean, it was an overtime goal last year that separated these teams, and I don't really know how much better or worse both of these teams got. So I knew this was going to be a dogfight coming in, and it was a great game. And I think the better team prevailed, and I'm excited to see what Muhlenberg has going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know how much time we need to spend on this one. I just think that, like, your sinus goes as Tyler Neal goes, and he went 1 for 9, so they only scored 5 goals. You know, like, if he's shooting 3 for 6, which I think is the result, if 2 of those shots earlier in the game go, now he's getting slid to. And that whole your sinus defense, you know, is different, or that whole your sinus offense is different. Not only now does he not need to get to 9 shots, but it's because he doesn't need to take 9 shots because the defense is sliding and he can now just be an orchestrator. Eric Odort is another guy that for them, like, I think he's most of the time is a beneficiary of Tyler Neal making stuff happen. But he just wasn't able to kind of be the guy that, like, orchestrates things on his own. Still gets to a goal and an assist. He ends up leading them in points on the day because, you know, if you only get to 5 goals and one of your players has 2 points, he's probably your leading scorer. But, yeah, so I think, like you said, you've got to give credit to Muhlenberg, Jack Kramer, every team in the country basically is definitely every team in the Centennial could use Jack Kramer. Every team in the Centennial, probably every team in the country could use Max Seaver. And so Muhlenberg has some guys that, like you said, they can ball. And so this isn't something to be super, super, super surprised about. They did have that double overtime game with them last year. And then they also had an overtime game with Gettysburg last year. So Muhlenberg, you know, like, obviously last year was all Centennial, but they've had some results in the last bit that wouldn't lead for this to be like a holy, like a big red flag, holy crap moment. So I it's kind of a backhanded compliment. Like, you want to be like, you know, this is crazy, this is awesome, great. But you also want to be like, you know, like, this is expected, you know, like, this is something that, you know, if you've been paying attention to Muhlenberg, like, and you know, like, you're not that crazy about this. Like, this isn't that something that just shocks you that much, you know, like, so I guess we're riding that line a little bit odd in this situation, but, you know, credit for winning it, but not too much credit because you guys, because it's been a situation where they've been, you know, knocking on the doorstep for a while now.
Yep. Finally, happy to see them break through.
Well said. All right, let's keep it moving. Let's go and hit. Let's go to your boys. Let's go to, let's go up to the NESCAC again, and we'll go Bowdoin 15, Amherst 12. Bowdoin moves to 9-0 on the season. This one was a really fun game if you're a specialist guy. I mean, it's a fun game in general. Like, a lot, all these games, especially all these Bowdoin games, are fun games. But especially if you're a specialist guy, Mitch Likens and Robert Hobbs in the goal. Both of them are excellent. And then at the X, you have Ethan Barnard and Nicholas Kopp, who are both young, like, up-and-coming studs that are going to continue to make names for themselves. Like, we're going to be talking about these guys going head-to-head for another, you know, few years. And so Barnard edges it with 17 of 30, but Kopp goes 13 of 29. So it's pretty close on it. You know, it's a good battle there. We talked about already your boy Brock. He finds the back of the net a few times, whatever. PJ Clement.
Going like a little too quickly there, like, but yeah, Brock, sure, but, sure.
And then Clemente goes for seven points on the day. But all of that outshined by Bowden's Donald Mullane with 9 points. I know you caught this one. Give me some big dog thoughts.
Oh, yeah. So, all right. I have a specific thought on Bowdoin. So let me go to Amherst first. I thought Likens, he did have a good game, like you were saying, but he had a kind of a slow start, which got them in that hole early. They did have a great game plan though, Bowdoin. And like we talked about before, the runs were really killer. Bowdoin goes from 5-3 to 11-3 in the second quarter, And by then, I think the game's pretty much out of hand. I mean, Amherst really does battle back, and it is a hotly contested game. But I think Bowdoin pretty much has it in hand after that. So at the end of the day, yep, Bowdoin definitely dominated this game. And Amherst has a lot of questions. I mean, Brock played a great game. You touched on Clemente's also a serious contender. But I don't know. I just don't know about Bowdoin. I'm a little hesitant on them right now. I love Hobbs. I want to start with that. Hobbs is a great goalie. He's a freshman this year, and he's playing lights out, and he's really keeping them in a lot of games. But their defense is just giving up way too many shots, and they're clearing it at a pretty low clip right now. I think I have them around 78%. Yep, 77% clearing right now, which is a little bit into the style that they play. They like to get up quick with the transition, but you're not taking care of the ball at 77%. I don't care who you are. That's going to come back to bite you later. So I don't know about Bowdoin. I'm very happy for them. I love this run that they're going on, and I love seeing new teams pop up and be contenders. But are they for real? Are we going to be talking about them in May? Personally, the big dog says no. Nope.
Got it. All right. So I did get to catch all of this one. This one was really interesting. Like, they come out and they go on that 7-goal run, and I'm just thinking, like, when am I going to text Caleb? You know, like, do I wait for this game to end? And the reason I'm thinking that is because, will this text come back to bite me? You know, so I think you're right. Like, I'm not sure if we went and checked the efficiency numbers. I'm not sure how much they would love Bowdoin on the defensive side of the ball. I don't know how much they would love Amherst on the defensive side of the ball either, though. I do think, though, that ultimately both teams are going to be able to, over the course of 60 minutes, almost regardless of who their opponent is, they're going to be able to create enough possessions for their offense to make things count. You know, like, both teams have a real chemistry on offense and some serious talent on that side of the ball that I think that ultimately, like, unless they see a team that comes in with a really good game plan and a good and dominates them at the X, like, they're going to have instances where they're in games with everybody just because they can outscore and score quickly and, you know, turn transition and into something, you know, rapidly. And so it's going to take a special situation for somebody to come in and beat, you know, most of these teams.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I got Bowdoin at 41 for defensive efficiency and Amherst at 32. So a little bit better there for my boys.
Big dog index or the Patrick McEwen index?
That's the official stats. I won't break the big dog stats out just yet. The people aren't ready for that just yet.
Okay. All right. Yeah, shout out to Lax Film Room for spending some time working on some D3 stats for us, creating some efficiency numbers and setting up the D3 RPI system. Maybe if you guys are nice enough and share this enough, we'll release some of what that information tells us.
Yes, huge shout out. Thank you.
All right, let's move on from the weekend and let's go ahead and do a little bit of a Wednesday preview, right? Talk about some of these matchups while we've been talking about these teams, and then we'll go ahead and we'll quickly get into some of the top 20 discussion. But let's first start, let's get out of the NESCAC for a second before we have to come back and talk about two of those matchups. But let's start with Union and St. John Fisher. I'm fired up for this one. I like to
this
think
is going to be huge.
Unofficial whistleblower. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm giving myself too much credit. But when I first came into starting to do D3 coverage, I like had no idea who they were. You know, like, coaching in the South, basically. I mean, we ended up in the North a whole bunch because of the geography or whatever, but, like, I never came into instances where I needed to go and, like, watch a whole bunch of St. John Fisher film or anything. Like, I knew who they were. I knew they were a good team, but then when I came into this role with coverage for Inside Lacrosse and like started like looking more at the landscape, like I was like, man, this St. John Fisher team is awesome. Like they have some athletes. And then all of the players from when I first started watching them are still there. Like they're all just graduate students now. So like I like to think of myself as the St. John Fisher whistleblower a little bit. And then Union, like I don't think I need to make a big claim story for them or anything. I think they pretty much made that statement for themselves when they beat Tufts last week. And then also, quick plug here, Matt Kinnear, if you're looking for some more Union, for some more Union news here, Matt Kinnear did release on, what day is it? Today's Tuesday. Yep. Time travel back to Tuesday. And you can go check the Union feature that Matt Kinnear did. All right, back to today. But yeah, so Union, St. John Fisher, that game is going to be awesome. Like, I am fired up for that one. What do you think?
Absolutely ecstatic for this one, Dan. I think, I'm biased, like you know, but it's going to come down to one person for me, and that's Donahue. Is he going to be able to stand on his head and make some great saves and allow Union the chance to win this game, or is he going to fold under the pressure? So far, he's shown us that he can stand to the task. So I'm looking forward to watching it. But this one is going to be awesome, Dan. I can't wait to watch this.
Yeah, this one's going to be awesome. The Union two-way midfielders, Kieran McGovern, who does St. John Fisher decide to put their pole on? Do they try and short stick Peter Burns, your boy? If so, I know you think he makes him pay. You know,
they
like,
need to. They need to. Burns is a problem.
Can Union limit Joe Post at the faceoff X? Like, there's lots of question marks about this one that ultimately we're just going to have to wait and see.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I'm pumped. I can't wait.
That's my headline for Wednesday. Despite some good NESCAC action, we also have Williams Tufts, Amherst Wesleyan, Hamilton and Middlebury. Hamilton and Middlebury is intriguing.
Oh, yeah.
I know you're a Hamilton fan, and I know you thought that they had a good chance on Sunday against Wesleyan. Do you think they have another good chance on Wednesday against Middlebury?
I sure do, and it comes down to one person, Seamus Fagan. He is absolutely incredible this year. I mean, we talked about Spagnoletti a little bit, saving a 62% clip this year. Well, this man's at 66, Dan. He's got the highest save percentage in D3 right now, according to the big dog numbers. So I think with a goalie like that, anything's impossible. You're in play for almost any game. So I'm excited to see this.
Anything is possible.
Is possible. Yes. It's getting a little late here, but yeah, anything is possible.
All right. And Williams Tufts. Does Tufts come out and just say like, do they come out and make a statement?
I say yes. I think they have the talent to do so. I think that if they come out and play to their level of play on their side, they'll be fine. If they come out and try to play down to the level of their competition, they're going to be in trouble. And like I said, they got to come to play for a full 60 minutes. They can't start strong. They can't just go on a big run in the third quarter. Like, we need 60 full minutes of lacrosse in order to beat this good team. So can they put it together? I say yes, but I may look like an idiot here in about 24 hours. So we'll see.
Yeah. I don't disagree with you. I kind of see that happening as well. I see them taking that CNU film and saying, okay, how can we apply this and give it a Tufts twist? And, you know, I can see that happening and being a similar version of that game, that CNU Williams game. All right. So that's Wednesday. We'll come back to these games. We'll come back and hit on these once they're finished, hit you with final scores and some quick reactions. But for now, let's keep this episode moving along, keep this pod moving along. And we're going to talk the top 20 poll that was just released through Inside Lacrosse. Let me read through it real quick, and then we'll come back. We'll hit on a few of those spots where it gets hairy and, you know, just chat through it. So, Salisbury, CNU, Union, RIT, St. John Fisher, York, Bowdoin, Tufts, Dickinson, St. Lawrence, Lynchburg, Amherst, Gettysburg, Cabrini, Williams, RPI, F&M, Stevenson, Middlebury, Wesleyan. So when this first came out, I took the link and I sent it to Big Dog and I said to him, what are you mad about? Big Dog, tell the people what you told me.
Oh, there's a couple issues with this, Dan. Where to begin? I'll work from the bottom and go up here. Real quick here, I'll jump to 17. Franklin and Marshall at 17. I mean, they're not on my list, and for good reason. They're the Big Dog soft team, and they have not shaken that label off, and I don't see them shaking it off anytime soon. They're okay defensively, a little shaky in the goal right now. I just don't see them as a top 20 team. They have a couple skills guys and Rigsby, and they can make some things happen, but they're a soft team, Dan, and until they prove me wrong, I'm going to stick to that narrative. So
they haven't F&M lost to anybody though. Like, it's a hard situation. So they have that win. And then their only losses are to Gettysburg and York, who are both like relatively highly ranked teams. So it's a hard thing to take them and like remove them from the list when they haven't dropped any losses that are, you know, like what we would consider bad losses. And they have that Stevenson one.
I can't disagree with looking at that, but I'm going off the eyeball test, Dan. I mean, I'm looking at the teams that deserve to be in there. I mean, RPI, Middlebury, Washington and Lee, Wesleyan. I think these are all teams that are very deserving of a top 20 spot. And I think if we played F&M played any four of those teams tomorrow, they lose.
So who would you replace them with then?
So Big Dog top 20, I got it for you here right now. We're going 20 with Washington and Lee, so I guess they take their spot. Middlebury 19, RPI 18, and Wesleyan 17.
But the rest of your 19 teams are the same. The only team that's different is F&M, who you have WNL at 24.
Correct. Yeah, F&M out, everyone else moved up, and then WNL has that 20 spot.
Everybody else moved up. You have a little bit different order. All right. Well, talk to me. You have Cabrini at 16. We had them at 14. Talk to me a little bit about them.
Yeah, let me get my Cabrini notes pulled up here. And you will note that a lot of my my thoughts, my ideas are coming from the defensive end. That's just where my mind is most of the time. I try to take in everything to account. But just being a goalie, that's where my mind definitely goes. Cabrini, I think they're playing good, though. I mean, Matt Nessler is playing very good this year. He's a graduate senior, so he's a definite leader out there. So I'm liking what he's doing right now. And as far as their defense, I have them ranked pretty high on my list here going through it. Yep, I have them with a top 10 defense, and that's primarily because of their clear rank. They rank pretty high, pretty efficient with their clears, around 86%, and they're closing in on 100 caused turnovers on the year. So I'm really liking what their defense is doing, and I think they're a solid team all around.
Cabrini is interesting to me because they're, like, I guess you could kind of put them in the F&M boat where they don't have any bad losses, but they don't really have any good wins either. But as you look at their schedule, I guess their best win is a 8-6 win over Hampton Sydney, who just lost to Roanoke, you know. All right, well, let's go ahead and let's find another spot. Let's find one of those like tricky spots. Lynchburg. That Lynchburg, so, Dickinson,
yeah,
St. Lawrence. I feel like that, you know, like that's an interesting group. Dickinson at 10-0. Can only beat the teams in front of you, you know, like you, we can't have our magics let us be matchmakers for the day or anything with that. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, again, they're in a situation where like some of those wins, I'm just not totally sold on in terms of them being justification to have Dickinson up super, super high, you know? So I feel like that's a pretty good spot for them. What do you think of that?
Yeah, with Dickinson, I'm bullish on them right now. I like them a lot. They haven't played very talented teams, but when they do, they're winning the ones that they're supposed to be. Right now, I have Brando at 63%. He's doing pretty good, but he's not always healthy and he's missed some games. So I would like to see him be a little bit more of a staple on that defense. But speaking of their defense, they are one of the best in the league that I have. They do not give up many shots, which is good because their goalie play is a little shaky right now. They have a lot of cause turnovers, and they clear very efficiently at 87%. So I do love what they're doing on defense and taking care of the ball. So I do think that's a pretty deserving spot for them.
Yeah, so the Brandout injury, at this point, he has played and started in 6 games. Patrick Scarborough has now played in 7 games and started 4 of them. Scarborough is not, like, there's not a huge, huge drop-off or anything there. Like, Brandout is potentially a game-changer, and if he gets hot in any given moment, like, he can change the game. But Scarborough has been great for him. And again, like, I really like Dickinson. I like their makeup. I think that they are, you know, good, hard, downhill Dodgers. Quality wins with Stevenson. Stevens, which has turned out not to be a great win, but in the moment, like, when that happened, first game of the season, like, that was a big win for them. But they've had some questionable, like, eye-opening results as well. Like, they give up 15 goals to Roanoke. They beat Elizabethtown by 1 goal. They kind of sleepwalk, and they're losing at times to Swarthmore. They end up winning 11-7, but that's not like a pretty win. It wasn't exactly a top 20 performance win or anything, you know? So, like, I think they're great. I think they're, you know, a really solid team. But despite being at 10-0, I don't have them jumping up over Tufts or Bowdoin.
Mm-hmm. And I think I'd agree with you there.
Yep, so St. Lawrence I have next in that group at 10, and then Lynchburg at 11. St. Lawrence, they now sit at 7-2, with their 2 losses being to Union, who we, you know, think is pretty good, and St. John Fisher, who, again, we think is pretty good. That Union loss, to the degree that it's, that there are such things that exist, is a good loss. Like, they are up in that game for a good point of time. Basically the entire game. And then Union needs to go on a 5-goal run. They get it, so, like, credit to them. But, like, they need to go on a run to win that game. And they end up winning the fourth quarter 5-0. So they win the game, you know. But that's one where, like, despite that they lost it, the result, you know, I guess, like, breeds a sense of confidence as well.
I get that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's too part of the eyeball test, where you know a team is good enough to be where they are. It's just maybe not transitioning to the score.
Which leads us to Lynchburg. Now 6-4. Their 4 losses are W now, which, like, you know, that's a tough one. They has a couple losses on the year to start the season that were a little bit earlier that really hurt their resume. That had they, you know, won one or two of those games, their resume is pretty clearly, you know, a top 20 team. But with those losses, it isn't, you know, it isn't that clear, at least I should say. Mm-hmm. And so that W&L loss, Then the Lynchburg's also lost to Tufts, CNU, and Salisbury, three teams we think are pretty good. Quality wins over, I guess Cabrini is a quality win right now. It is, you know, it's a quality win.
Oh, yeah.
They just don't have a big quality win themselves to bolster themselves with. Denison as a good win. And then that's kind of it for Lynchburg right now. So they're down a little bit just with kind of in that same situation where they don't have a big quality win to kind of rest themselves on. And now they have a not great loss with that WNL loss.
Yep, and not too much to really bolster themselves up for the rest of the year. I mean, maybe a good Hamden-Sydney game gets them back on track. But other than that, I don't really see too much opportunity for them to gain some ground.
Yeah, yep, they're going to have to, make sure that they're taking care of business through the rest of the season, especially in the regular season with the ODAC, not to mm-hmm. put themselves in any tougher situations.
Yep.
And so now here comes another spot where we kind of run into some trouble. 7-8 with Bowdoin and Tufts, and 5-6 mm-hmm. with John Fisher in York. I found myself in a spot where I thought potentially either one of them could go over either one of it. Like, I find them in tandems, I guess I should say. Meaning, if Bowdoin or Tufts has the resume or the, argument to be above either York or St. John Fisher, it means they have the argument to go over both of them. And so in this instance, I leaning with the teams that were ranked higher previously, with St. John's Fisher and York compared to where Bowdoin was, with, you know, Tufts obviously being higher, but now a 2-loss team. St. John Fisher is now 8-1 with their 1-loss coming to RIT, who now is a 1-loss team themselves, but a team we think is, you know, pretty good. Your 2-loss team, both losses coming to RIT, who we just said, we think is pretty good. And then Salisbury, who, you know, is currently on a handful of opponents in the top 20 as a loss. So basically what we're saying is in those situations, they would have had to jump both of them, despite that neither one of them has a great win to stand on. It probably meant that they would have needed to jump both of them, in which I don't see that being the case. You know, Bowdoin 9-0, their best win at this point, I guess now, is Middlebury and Amherst. I'm not exactly sure which one you value higher, but that Middlebury win now from the beginning of the season looks really good after they beat Tufts. And that's one of the reasons that we have Bowdoin, you know, over them. That was one thing that I know you and I talked back and forth about a decent amount, was which one of them deserved to be higher in the poll. Was it Tufts or Bowdoin? And part of what weighed into that was Bowdoin's beat Middlebury, and Middlebury's now beat Tufts. So transitive property, I think, is what they call that, right?
I think so. But yeah, me personally, I got Tufts over Bowdoin, and I think we touched on it before, but I think Bowdoin is they're kind of a ticking time bomb. We're gonna see them fall apart at some point. I'm not rooting for them. I rooting for them to fall apart. I really am enjoying their success and the run that they're seeing, but at the same time, I just don't think the numbers are in their favor. It's gonna start coming down at some point in time. And Tufts has the talent to be up there. So they're just kind of going through a rough patch for me personally. So I definitely have Tufts over Bowdoin at this point in time.
Yeah, so that's interesting. I just think that, you know, right now their resumes, though maybe are close, but Bowdoin at 9-0, Tufts now at 2 losses. I just think that in that instance, Bowdoin, you know, gets the edge. Fortunately, they play each other, so we will get to see exactly which one of these teams gets the edge over the other one of these teams. We have to wait a little bit to get there, but they do still have each other on the radars for down the line.
27th, I'll have my text message, I told you so, ready to go.
That's fine. Yeah. So then let's move to York. Let's talk about them for a second. They have Cabrini on the cusp here. How big of a matchup? How big of a game is that to you?
I think it's going to tell a lot about both teams. Both teams really need to have a strong performance here. York, like we've talked about, they have those two losses. And then after that, they really don't have too much bolstering up their schedule. That 8-7 win over Washington and Lee now looks pretty good. 18-7 win over what I think is a non-existent Franklin and Marshall, doesn't matter. So this is going to be one of the few games that they have left on their schedule that they can really show who they are. I mean, you got Cambrini, Gettysburg, and Stevenson left on their track record there. So we'll see how they come out. And again, Cabrini needs this just as much as York needs it. We went through their schedule, but Cabrini doesn't have too much area to gain ground. So they need a win against either York or Salisbury to really bolster them up. So I think they're going to come out firing. This is going to be a great game to watch. But at the end of the day, I got to pick my Spartans. I think the defense is too solid. I think Ryan Kennedy shuts it down. And Jack Michael doesn't let anything through.
Yep. All right. So let's keep it moving then. We touched on St. John's Fisher a bit. They have a big midweek matchup coming up with Union. And then they're back into their Empire play where, you know, they're going to be tested too much. So this is kind of the last opportunity for St. John Fisher to land a big splash win. Right now, the best win bolstering them is an Amherst win. That your sinus win now looks a little bit less important out now that they've lost to Muhlenberg, and then earlier in the season win over St. Lawrence. And so they have a few quality wins there, but this Union game on Wednesday is another big one for them.
Yep.
Let's keep it moving in the list. Another spot of contention. Union 3, RIT 4. You have it opposite with RIT 3, Union 4, and I believe so does the USILA. Tell me what you base that on.
Again, that's the eyeball test, Dan. I think RIT, they have the talent. They are poised to be that third team. But Union's hot right now. I think if both of these teams play right now, I think it's a complete toss-up, maybe even closer into Union's favor. But I think when we look at this list come 2 months from now, Union or RIT will be higher up than Union. And I just think they're more battle-tested. They're more proven. I love this run that Union's going on, and I hope they continue it. But I think RIT just has the talent and are battle-tested enough to make a deeper run than Union.
So this one's interesting because guess who plays each other on Saturday?
Oh, let me think. Who is it?
That would be RIT and Union. So this one, opposite of Tufts and Bowdoin, where we're going to have to wait a while to get it sorted out. This one we get sorted out this weekend. And it should be another awesome game. Union got the nod in the vote. I also had them higher in my personal list. The RIT-RPI game, like, do I think RIT is probably still the better team despite ending up as the losing on the scoreboard? Yes. That doesn't mean you don't get punished for the result, you know? Meanwhile, Union took care of business, you know, and beat Tufts, which, you know, following the Middlebury loss doesn't look as, you know, crazy of a win, but they now sit at 9-0. They have taken care of business in all of their games. You know, like, there's none of these like weird results where you look at it and you go, oh, well, you know, they only beat so and so by one. You know, like, and we said this when we talked about them the first time on that very first podcast, that like, I don't think that their identity really lends itself to just like blowing teams out. They're just like a slow, suffocating, grind you out, play better defense, take advantage of their opportunities, and then you know, like, just over the course of 60 minutes, prove that they're the better team. That recipe does, that identity doesn't always make for blowing teams out. But like I said, it makes for them taking care of business. You know, they have a 14-6 win over Williams, handled business. Springfield, who beat Amherst, 14-7 win over them. You know, they beat Middlebury, who's beat Tufts now, and they beat them by 4. You know, like, solid win. Beat St. Lawrence, beat Tufts. So I just have their resume at 9-0, and with those quality wins, you know, above RIT in terms of where they currently stand within the landscape of D3.
Definitely fair. Yep.
And then the Southern battle. The Southern battle for 1 and 2, where we have Salt Lake 1 and U2. And there's people that think that CNU should be 1 over Salisbury. And they got some votes in the poll as well for the USILA poll from the coaches. So there's some coaches that think it as well. What does the big dog think?
The big dog's got Salisbury locked in at 1, Dan. I can't move them. They're the best team in the nation right now. And until they prove that they're not, I'm not moving them from that spot. I don't think anything from in that 1 and 2 spot is going to change until 4-16. I think that's going to be the next opportunity we're going to see any movement up at the top spot. But as long as both these teams take care of business like they have been, I don't think we're going to see any movement.
Well, the way you worded that, if we were going to see movement, implies that CNU would be causing movement, right? Otherwise, it would just be the exact same. So is that your way of saying that you think CNU gets it done?
I would love to see it. Knowing how Salisbury operates, I think they're going to come out with a pretty strong game plan against CNU. And if you're CNU, I don't know if that's the game you want to push all your chips onto the table on. I mean, I think they have enough talent to win the game just outright. But I, honestly, as from a coaching standpoint, from a big picture standpoint, I don't know if you want to pull out all of your stops in that game just to get the win.
Can you Coach Belichick cut off hoodie right now?
Oh, 100%. I'm in the lab, you know, Justin, thinking through things here. But I, at the end of the day, I mean, do you want to show all of your stops, everything you got on a Saturday night game in April, or do you want to save that for a CAC championship game or an NCAA matchup? I mean, that's what I would do.
That is interesting. It's C2C now, though, Buster. that is a really interesting perspective. I really like that. I don't know that I disagree, but I think if I'm CNU, I'm going all in on winning both games. You know, like, I think you just go and you got to make sure you're coming in and you're throwing everything you have at them. You know, you're not going to sit back and rest on your morals waiting for the championship game. Come in, smack them in the face, you know, attack them, go at them. And I think CNU is more equipped than ever to do it. But I got to see it, you know? I got to see it. I got to see it happen. I still have last year just ingrained in my head. But I bet so does CNU, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They've been for 365 days, had that burned into their brains as well, been working to get better and come back this season and attack them and give themselves a better chance at it after losing 4 times last year.
I agree. And I still think they come out and give them smacking, but yeah, I mean, I don't know if you pull out all of your stops in that game.
All right. So, you know, that's one that's just going to be, you know, circled on the calendar for another couple weeks here until we get to actually see it unfold. But Salisbury takes it, comes in at 1. And to any degree that they were tied, like, maybe you just give the edge to the team that's won 12 national championships. That probably makes sense to me. And we have time traveled again. Caleb, welcome to Wednesday night. People, welcome to Thursday morning. You are now getting extra action from Big Dog and your host, Dan Kaplan. We are coming back for a special quick hitter to come and talk about the Wednesday night and review, all right, some of the scores that happened, some results that we felt like were on the cusp, Hamilton breaking through and getting a win in the NESCAC, and a really, really awesome Union St. John Fisher game. You know, let's just get to it. What do you say, Big Dog? How you doing?
I love it, man. There was some awesome lacrosse on tonight, and I was here for it.
Absolutely. Well, let's start with the big one, the first one, the most exciting one, Union 13, St. John Fisher 12. It's back and forth all game. Defensively, both teams came in with a plan, and I don't know. Actually, I will say I don't know that St. John Fisher came in with the plan to go zone, but it was a great adjustment, and it worked.
Mm-hmm.
Both defenses came in with some adjustments and forced the offenses to have to adjust. Man, just a really awesome game, back and forth the whole time. Union's Peter Burns is the hero. 5 goals and an assist, 6 points on the day, leads the day in scoring. Kieran McGovern and Keaton McCann each have a goal and an assist, but they deserve a ton of credit, do a lot of different things for that team. You know, they initiate on offense, they play reliable defense, they're solid in the clear, they're great pushing transition. Like, they deserve a ton of credit for that win. Man, really fun one. What did you think of this one?
Yeah, it was exhilarating to watch. I can't say it enough. Peter Burns, he's going to be a guy that you have to watch and you have to put your best defender on, because he's an absolute problem there for Union. But just a great game overall. I just got the sense at the end, it was kind of like a college basketball game. Just whoever had it late in the fourth quarter, whoever got it last was going to take it home. And it ended up not being that way, but it surely was fun to watch. Donahue, he made some great saves when it counted. He was a tad leaky at the end for my liking. He did let that 12th goal sneak by that I thought possibly could have been savable. But he made the big saves when it counts, and that's what you expect of a goalie on a top 5 team. So definitely proud of the way they played. And I didn't love the shot selection that Union had in the fourth quarter, kind of alluding to the zone looks that you were talking about. Definitely gave them some fits. But at the end of the day, they adjusted well. I think they do need to shoot a little bit better, though, when they do get those zone looks, because they were just giving a lot of popcorn to St. John Fisher there. But absolutely electric game to watch. Loved it. Wish it would have been on a Saturday where we could have gotten together and maybe hung out for this one, because it was definitely one worthy of that.
Yeah, it was a great one. So St. John Fisher, Ian Evans, Jack Maholville, and Nick Miller, each with 4 points on 2-2. Those guys, you know, they're going to get theirs. Really, really tough coverage, each one of them, and they each do a lot of different they each kind of are able to, I would say, impose themselves in a bunch of different ways. So, you know, they're going to get onto the scoreboard. Union did a good job of kind of keeping the other guys in control, though, and keeping those guys, you know, off the scoreboard and making everything really tough on those guys, knowing that, you know, at the end of the day, those guys are going to be pretty tough to keep off the scoreboard. But if you can keep everybody else in check, you might still be in a really good spot. That defense is really good, and like you said, you like Dan Donahue. I do as well. I think he's one of the better goalies in Division III. That defense is really good. They're nice and organized. They play lots of different D-middies, because they can sprinkle in an O-middie here and there with Brian Davis and Kieran McGovern. So I say they play lots of D-middies, meaning they play lots of different bodies on defense. And so that gives them, you know, somebody fresh out there that's always out and able to make sure they're confronting Dodgers and, you know, making sure that they have a presence on them at all times. And then we haven't talked about the star of the defense, but Ryan Pulisi. I think we've mentioned him in the past. We mentioned him in his performance against Bradall, and then he has another good one today on Ian Evans. He's tough. You know, he's one of those guys that, like, kind of embodies the expression of, like, you're going to feel his presence from the second you get off the bus, which I guess this was a home game for them, but I guess so. It means the second he got off the bus, you know, you're feeling his presence, and he kind of plays with that edge. And so that defense is really good. I really like what I see from them.
Yep, he's a guy I definitely would have won playing in front of me back in my day. So good to see that out there.
Yeah, absolutely. That was a fun one. Let's go ahead and move to another one that wasn't quite as close, but we'll go with Wesleyan 21, Amherst 14. Wesleyan gets a little swagger back, 7-goal win over NESCAC rival. You know, that's always a good thing if you're them. Sexton goes for 7 points. Hazard goes for 7 points. And Gill goes for 3 points. So the attack gets it going. And then the top midfield kind of gets going as well with a good solid string of points. Even though I'm really mad at them and confused because one of their midfielders just magically has 2 numbers and we're supposed to just accept that. But I guess it is what it is. And then Amherst, their attack, you know, another group that still gets theirs, 5-piece for each one of them with Krumenacker, Gonzalez, Clementi. 2 top O-mids with Jake Bennett and Baird Demeli get theirs as well with 2 points and 3 points. My biggest takeaway here from this one is how quickly things went downhill when Ethan Opdahl got injured, which that is Amherst's long stick midfielder. He gets hurt in that game, and it's just like everything from there goes downhill. Clearing goes downhill. Organization within the defense goes downhill. Their ability to pick up ground balls in their own end goes downhill. Their ability to pick up ground balls on the wing goes downhill. You know, so that was a defense that I think was already kind of struggling, and then they lost like their biggest piece of it, their strongest piece of it, their best piece for the clear, their best piece for pushing transition. So it just kind of all spirals from there. And then Wesleyan does a good job of making it count when they have the chances.
Yeah, he's really the anchor for that defense. And, I mean, you have a young goalie in Lycan who didn't even see the field today. We saw Murano and Williams in split time, and I thought they both struggled. So when you have that anchor coupled with your top pole going out, I really don't think you can get too much done on the defensive side, and we saw that today. Wesleyan took full advantage.
Yeah, agreed. I do want to, before we move on from this one, I do kind of want to talk about this Wesleyan midfield. I think this is a really good group. It's weird because DJ Dixon, our 2-numbered friend, is kind of coming in and just kind of getting his legs underneath of him. He plays hockey in the offseason, which is like just kind of like the most NESCAC thing of all time, but it happens up there, I guess. So he's kind of just kind of getting his legs underneath of him. But him with CK Giancola and Spencer Robbins, like that's 3 guys that can really make you make defenses feel pressure. 3 guys that can get downhill. All 3 of them tonight have 4 points. Robbins and Giancola both have it on 2 and 2, and then Dixon has it on 3 goals and an assist. They're all just like athletic and well-rounded size-wise. Like I think Robbins is probably the best of the bunch in terms of like just his well-rounded consistency. But then Giancola is probably the most dynamic. Like he's the most prone to potentially go off and just have like a huge day. But the group I think is a really good group that you kind of have to just keep an eye on moving forward to continue to develop and continue to make defenses feel pressure, which now is going to open things up for that slick attack unit.
Definitely. Been very impressed with them.
All right. Let's keep it moving. Let's go to your boys, the Jumbos. Tough 19, Williams 10. Williams scraps it out a little bit, but just doesn't quite have the horses to run with them. And Tufts gets back on track after dropping 2 in a row. I know you caught a decent bit of this one. What'd you think?
Yep. Yeah, this was one where Tufts came out hot. They came out and seemed like they were going to right the ship. But Williamson did get their runs, and they kept it close in the first half. Or in the first quarter, I believe it was 6-5 at the end of the first. And still in that second quarter, it was a little bit close until Tufts got on their run around 10 minutes to go in the second. But once they got on that run,
Do we have to time travel real quick? Do we need to try and time travel back to yesterday when you said that Tufts doesn't play the second quarter? Do you think
they if you could throw that clip in here, I would.
Are you skeptical at all that I took that clip and leaked it before this podcast came out?
I hope you didn't, man. Because did they right the ship there? Oh, I mean, look at this. They went on what? One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight goal. Like, I can barely count this high. Like, absolutely insane. But I mean, all credit to them. I was hounded on them pretty hard earlier in the episode about not putting a full 60 minutes together. And what do they do out here against a great Williams team? They put a full 60 minutes together, and not only a full 60 minutes, but a dominant second and third quarter to really just squeeze the life out of Williams. And once that run gets over, it's 15-6, the game's over. There's no coming back for Williams. But yeah, watching this game, it was Tufts was definitely the better team. I thought they stepped up defensively and had a good game plan. Garzon played pretty well. The shots that he did save, the shots that he let in, were pretty tough ones. So he did make the ones that he had to make, which I liked. And the Williamson defense, or the Williams defense, they got a little bit to work on. They give up a lot of shots. Brock had an okay game today, but I still think there were a few that he'd want back. But it didn't really matter at the end of the day with how Tufts came out and played.
Yeah, and who'd you say was in the goal for them?
Yeah, it was Bach tonight, who isn't their normal starter. I normally have their starter
Yeah,
pegged
I didn't
as.
notice that in real time, actually.
Yeah, Freitas has been the one that I've been seeing normally play for them, so I thought it was a little odd. He and Freitas has been playing well as far as the stats have shown. I mean, 59% clip, but he is seeing some of the most shots in the NCAA right now. So maybe it is something where you might benefit from a switch up, and get something a little bit different from him. I thought Bach did okay with the transition. A lot of Williams's looks were off of some transition, from the defensive end. So that is good to see. But looking forward to kind of seeing where Williams goes from here. If they want to make a little bit of a run.
Yeah, definitely. Tufts. So one thing that kind of sticks out for them right now is at the X, Parker Merrill, freshman, currently 100 of 158 on the season for 63%. You know, that's really impressive. And then they also have a bit of a 1-2 punch because they have a senior returner in Aiden Hess that, you know, has a ton of faceoffs in his career under his belt. So the two of them give you a little bit of a 1-2 punch, but Merrill's been impressive and has really, really done well in the last few games, including today. He does well as, let's see exactly what he put up real quick. We can look that up, right?
Oh yeah. And hey, while you're looking that up, let me give a quick shout out to Jack Boyden. Man, does that guy have a cannon. It was fun to watch him shoot it out there today. Whew.
Yeah, so he goes 22 of 31. Yeah, so he's doing really well. And like we say with this Tufts team, if you can control a few things defensively and you can generate a bunch of possessions for him off the faceoff X, they usually end up making those possessions count over 60 minutes, you know. So if you're getting him,
Definitely.
that's definitely a good sign for him. And then from a freshman, that's interesting. And then another good performance from a freshman at close defense in Donahue as well.
Yep.
All right, anything else on this one before we move on, other than the Jack Boyden approval?
Gotta love him, but I also gotta give credit where credit's due. Bradel did have a great game. I thought he came out, dished the ball out well. And starting to get back to looking to his old self there. So content, looking forward to continually seeing him improve throughout the year.
Yep, so he has 8 points on the day. And then Cam Kelleher with 7 on 5 goals and 2 assists. And he's really interesting. He's logged a ton of ground balls on the season too. Like they're using him on wings, and he's an undersized kid that like, I mean, he's fast, don't get me wrong, but he's a tough player. He's doing a really good job for them. He's one guy that you know we got to continue to keep an eye on. We're going to be launching some mid-year All-American stuff, and so he'll definitely be, you know, in the mix with those when that comes out. All right, let's go ahead. Let's get to them. Hamilton 14, Middlebury 12. They've been knocking on the door. They've had some close results as of late. The big difference here, they really get an edge in the specialty positions. Fagan with 15 saves. And then they go 77% at the X. with Torben Wonderly. So, you know, you get that type of an edge in the specialty positions, and you get a big ground ball going, picking up 47 to the Middlebury 33. You know, those three things combined, when that happens, you're usually in pretty good shape. They've been due for it. So it's exciting to see them kind of get over the hump and actually land a good win here. What do you think about this one, Caleb?
Yeah, I've been pretty hot on Hamilton all year. If you go back and look through the Big Dog top 20 poll, you can see that they've broken through a little bit in my analysis there. So not too surprised of this result, but I'm definitely happy for Hamilton really, really proud of the way that they played. Fagan, great job in the goal tonight. I've been pretty high on him. He's been a pretty good anchor for that defense. And he showed it tonight with his 15 saves. O'Connor, though, he's another person who I've tagged has been playing pretty well so far this year, and he just didn't come really to play tonight. 14 goals against with only nine saves. Not too much to talk about there. So not too surprised at this result. Very happy for Hamilton that they can get over the hump and get a good quality win against a good, hot Middlebury team right now. But not too surprised by this.
Yeah. Nope. So now they have four losses on the season, three of them to teams that we have holding in pretty high regard, with Amherst, Bowdoin, and someone at some point needs to tell me if it's Bowdoin or Bowdoin. By the way, Amherst, whatever the B one is, Conn College. That's the tough one. That's kind of the red flag. And then Wesleyan is the other one that, you know, like, we think they're a pretty good team. And that Conn College game is an overtime loss where, you know, anything could happen. You know, one goal swing here or there, you know, one penalty that doesn't happen here or there or whatever, and you find yourself in a totally different position. But, you know, it happened. So for that reason, mm-hmm. it will not be making the Dan Kaplan top 20.
Oh, that's big news. You heard it here first.
At least I don't think. Pending the results from this weekend, you know. I guess anything can happen, especially after last weekend.
True, true. And there are some pretty big games this weekend, so definitely might want to wait to see how those play out.
Yeah, definitely. And let's take a quick peek at those. Let's mm-hmm. start Friday. This is the big dog, big weekend. Big weekend game of the weekend, big dog game of the weekend. Is that what we want to call it?
Oh yeah, the big dog game of the weekend. X gonna give it to you. It's gonna be live. York Cabrini, 7 p.m. Friday night under the lights. It's gonna be live. I know we talked about it a little bit earlier, but York, this is gonna be a good statement for them. If they can come out and really own Cabrini, and the same thing for Cabrini. We talked about them not having too many opportunities to come in and make a big statement. So this is going to be one of their few opportunities. Are they going to come to shine, or are they going to fold under the pressure? Can't wait to watch it.
And do you have any specific thoughts on how you think it plays out? Do you want to venture to it?
Yeah. Let me throw down the big dog score prediction right now. Oh, wow. I'm doing the calculations. Yep. Mm-hmm. All right, here we go. I got York 16, Cabrini 7. You heard it here first.
All right. And why do you feel that way?
I think the York D is solid. Cabrini's going to get a couple. Cabrini's, they work hard, they get theirs. But I think at the end of the day, the York D is just going to be too much. They're going to lock him down. And Harnick is going to work to get his. And York's going to come out and dominate.
All right. Mm-hmm. I'll take the opposite approach and say, just the way that we did last weekend for W&L Lynchburg, where we thought that you know, Lynchburg would probably win that game, but we did throw out a couple of scenarios where W&L could have won, such as going 50-50 from the X, getting a bunch of saves, and then you know, making sure that offense is connecting and finding the back of the net when they get their opportunities, which they didn't get a ton of opportunities, but they did connect on the ones that they did get. So let's go there again for this one. If Cabrini is going to beat York on Friday night, it'll be because JQE, not only does he do well at the X, but then when he picks him up, he's got a very offensive-minded, you know, just like a go right after he picks that ball up. And so I think that if Carini is in it, it'll be because he steals a few off the X from Fasaponte that don't just turn into, you know, like possessions for him. It'll be that they are able to make him count in transition, striking before that York defense that you think is pretty stout can get in and get settled. The other thing that transition opportunities give you are higher percentage shots, right? And so I mm-hmm. think if Cabrini can, you know, even the ground at the face off X, maybe steal one or two in transition off of it, and then try and steal a few in transition just in general throughout the game, you know, working to get higher percentage opportunities. So now you're getting good shots before the York defense can get set up, that Jack Michael doesn't have a good shot at seeing all the way and, you know, getting a good piece on.
Yep, and they're going to need to with how Jack's been playing.
So those are kind of the keys, I think, for Cabrini if they're going to pull it out, kind of get going in transition and generate some higher opportunity shots before that York D can get settled and, you know, get set up.
Mm-hmm.
All right, another big one. We're going to move to Saturday, Union and RIT. This one is like, get your popcorn ready.
Oh, yeah. This one I am looking forward to. I'm going to be clearing my Saturday for this one. Yeah, it's going to be awesome. If it's anything like the game we saw tonight, I can't wait. I think Union, they have to come out and play a great game defensively, similar to how they played tonight. I think Donahue's going to have to drink the same Gatorade that he had, or eat the same dinner that he had, whatever he did tonight. He's going to need to do that again on Sunday, because they're going to need to bring it, especially watching how RIT read.
All right. So the other one we want to take a look at here, Union and RIT. It'll be a 1 p.m. on Saturday game. And this one, like, better get your popcorn ready. What do you think about this one? You excited for this one or what?
Oh, yeah, man. This is going to be absolutely electric. If Union can come out and play anything like they did tonight, it's going to be a absolute battle. It's going to be a fun one, man. I can't wait. Union, I think they have a good shot against RIT. I mean, they obviously they're ranked higher this year, and they're running hot. But I don't know, RIT off a loss. I think they're going to be coming in. They're going to be hungry. They're the underdog in this, which you rarely ever say about RIT. So I think that they're going to come in and be hungry and maybe want this one a little bit more. But it's going to be a back and forth battle. I'm going to be excited for it. If I had to put a score on it right now, I'd give you 14-13 RIT over Union, but it's going to be a battle either way.
So you're saying you're taking RIT?
That's what I'm alluding to.
All right. Well, history would be on your side. I'm looking at it right now, and it's just flooring to look at how many close games they've had. Specifically in the last few years. So they play each other three times in 2019. They play each other twice in 2021. All of these games are close. You know, you have a 12-9 game in there, one 14-16, so that one's a little bit of an outlier. But other than that, you have an 11-9, a 12-10, a 10-9, a 12-9. Like, these games are just have been so close. And I think this is the best Union team we've had to date. And I think RIT might be down a little bit. I think I'm going to do it. We've seen him just beat Tufts. We've seen him come back and storm back against a good St. Lawrence team to come back and win. They're solid at the X. They're very good defensively. They're great in the middle of the field. They use this two-way D-mid system. So I think they're going to have an answer for some of these sub-games that RIT plays. I think this matchup of all the years, they're coming in with confidence. You're taking RIT I'm taking Union.
Oh, man.
I just talked myself into it right now. Right before I started talking, I don't think that that's where I was leaning, but as it was happening, I think they have a special group, you know, like we've said it a couple times where they have the ability to kind of ramp it up and play fast. They can slow it down. They are smart. They're poised. They play guys with, you know, size, but, you know, aren't just like lacking stick skills either. Like, this is a really strong, complete team. We've seen it a couple times on display. Saturday, you know, they're coming in for it fired up, despite that. Like, it's one thing to win a couple big games and then, like, you know, you have a letdown game. Like, that's not going to happen against RIT. You know, it's not going to happen against the defending national champions that are in your conference that have beat you 19 times in a row. You know, like, they're going to come in. They're not overlooking them. You know, like, if anything, if they come in and they win this game, I might take them to lose to RPI in their next game. Like... Like, that's kind of how I feel about this one, is they're going to be fired up, ramped up for it, and coming in with confidence. I'm taking them.
I love it. We can bet a beer on it. How about that?
Let's do it. Beer bet. All right, let's go back down to the South. Some Centennial action. Muhlenberg and F&M, and Dickinson and your Sinus. All four teams that, in my opinion, in different ways and different reasons, all need to have the opportunity here to make statements and, you know, like, could use them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
F&M could use a statement when coming out, beating Muhlenberg after they just beat your Sinus, you know? The Muhlenberg team and Muhlenberg defense is good enough to hold a your Sinus offense to low numbers, and then F&M comes out and puts a bunch of numbers on them. Like, that's a good, solid statement, you know? Dickinson has the opportunity to come out and beat your Sinus, and they have the opposite. Like, if your Sinus comes out and hangs 15 on them, if it's another situation like Dickinson had with Roanoke where it's a 19-15 game, like, we're going to be looking at each other like, you know, what happened here? We need to take a look at that. It's a little bit of a red flag. So in different ways here, all four teams have opportunities to come in and make a statement this weekend.
Yeah, definitely. So real quick anecdote here. I just got off the phone with my doctor. I was talking about doing some tattoo removal possibly from this weekend, about getting that F&M is soft removed from the gun. So I was talking to her. She was giving me some consultation, and she said, wait, they're playing Muhlenberg, who just beat her Sinus? You have nothing to worry about. So we're leaving that thing on there. I got the mules all day.
You're taking them to come in and beat them. Outright, if there's a money line on the DK Sportsbook, Big Dog's taking it.
Oh, I'm hammering that all day. That would be the Big Dog. Not even Lock of the Week. I might put Lock of the Year on that. That's Lock of the Year status.
That is aggressive. That is aggressive.
You heard it here first. I'm not afraid to put that out there.
Wow. What about Dickinson, your Sinus?
Yeah, that's going to be a fun one too. Yeah, I got Dickinson on that. I think they're playing pretty well right now. But who knows? I mean, Ursinus is a sneaky good team, so they could give them a battle. But I think this is going to be Dickinson's game to lose.
I'm still kind of floored by your take on the first Centennial game here. I mean, I'm not like, I guess I shouldn't be. But just your overabundance of confidence in that is alarming.
If you're asking me to bet against F&M, I am the happiest man in the world. I'll do it 10 times out of 10.
Let's do another beer bet on it then. If we're gonna get together for one, we might as well get together for two, right?
It sounds good to me. I mean, it sounds like it's gonna be a fun night for the Big Dog.
I will take F&M in a beer bet with you against Muhlenberg for this weekend.
All day. Let's do it.
All right. Wow. Big Dips fan for the weekend here, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's gonna be a fun one.
All right. Well, let's get to some closing remarks here on that. Beer bet's coming up. But before we let you go, I've been meaning to bring this up every time we've done this, done a podcast, but I haven't been prepared and I am not that organized. So we didn't have notes. This week we got notes. And on my notes, it says Fantasy D3 Lacrosse. It's real. It exists. Are you playing it? That's my question to you. And if you are, I love you. Make sure you're talking about your lineups. Tweet them at me. We'll let you know how you've done. I'll give you a grade. I think that would be fun. I'll give you a grade for the lineup. And if you aren't playing, what are you doing? You can't play.
You should be.
Come on. It's a ton of fun. Add some fun to your game day. If you are somebody that's motivated by a few dollars on it, we'll get a little head-to-head going with your buddy. Send them the link. Tell them whoever went. Do a beer bet with your buddy. Pull a Caleb and Cap. All right? What do you think? Caleb, you've done it.
Dana.
You enjoy it, correct?
It's a ton of fun. And, hey, the leaderboards are so much fun because you can see all your buddies up there. You can see me. You can see Cap. And see how your lineups compare with us. But it's been a lot of fun doing it every week. I know I get a lot of the old guys back in on it and just gets everybody a little bit more connected back into the game. But, hey, maybe we should throw a third beer on that and really just make a night of this.
You versus me head-to-head?
Head-to-head, mano-a-mano.
All right, let's do it. With that said, let's get this thing closed up. Let's let the people go. We've been talking their ear off for what feels like 3 days now via time travel. But let's let them go here. I am your host, Dan Kaplan. We thank you for listening. This is my pod partner, Caleb Abney, and you can find us on Twitter, Caleb at
CAbney02.
And myself at DKaplan46. Thanks so much.
Rinse out. Check you drop guys. That low.
Spaghetti.